movie reviews, and Hollywood news. The KSL Movie Show.
It's a special bonus extra movie show. Andy Farnsworth, solo for this one. On the movie show, we love to be local. Of course, we're Salt Lake-based. What we want to do is we feel bad. Steve and I felt bad that for Sundance, we didn't get accredited by Sundance. Well, we only got to see one thing at Sundance, and that was what we got a link for. And we talked about it on our movie show bonus episode that we did from the Megaplex Theaters in Salt Lake on the night that Sundance opened. But this is what we call a digital extra. It's a bonus for those of you who mostly listen to the movie show via podcast, or it's something that we really want our listeners to be able to have a chance to hear, but we just maybe don't have time during the actual broadcast show that we have every week, especially with its slightly shorter airtime as of 2024. So we don't want to let opportunities to talk about movies slip away. And so we're pleased to welcome, if you remember from that bonus movie show from Sundance, Rachel Wagner, who's a member of the Utah Film Critics Association, along with Steve and I. And she's also hosted on rachelsreviews.net. That's where you can get all of her reviews. And you host the Hallmarkies podcast.
That's right.
Yep. Okay. Yep. So we just got to make sure everybody knows your credentials. But here's the other thing. You'd already seen more Sundance films in the theater by the time we started our show. And you joined us and you talked about Girls State.
Yes. And so that was really fun. That was a highlight of the festival, getting to talk to you guys. It was really fun.
Oh, look at this shameless flattery. We're going to have you back a lot, I think.
Yes.
But then after that, now this is where Steve and I feel bad. We didn't get to go to see any of the others.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't... If you don't have tickets before this festival starts, it becomes infinitely more difficult to just pick them up. As we found out the night of, in fact, there were some people who had tickets who got turned away.
That wait list is tough.
Well, they weren't even on it. They had it, and they thought, and they showed up, and they were like, sorry, we already sold out. And they're like, well, why do we have... So that's how hard it was to get a ticket.
I do highly, highly recommend, and I actually wasn't accredited either for some reason. So I highly, highly recommend anyone thinking of attending Sundance Film Festival in the future that's local, get the local Salt Lake City Pass. It is the only way to fest. It is so much better. You get right in the pass holder line, and you get into anything that you want to go as long as you're 15 minutes before. And it's in Salt Lake. You can go to anything that you want to go to. And it's so nice because...
So it's for the people who are as much or more, definitely more concerned about the movies than seeing the stars that are there for the movies.
Yeah. And you still sometimes get panels.
This is for the true
movie you still lovers. Sometimes get panels and things like that in Salt Lake. But yeah, not quite the same as the Park City. But it's just a way more pleasant experience. Not only just the waiting and knowing that you'll actually, even if you have a ticket, you might not get in. But if you have a pass, you will get in as long as you're 15 minutes before. So it's better on that level, but also just it's a better experience.
So maybe that's how some of the people got turned away, is that there were pass holders that got there soon enough to get in.
Yeah.
But then the people who had just bought tickets for the individual show.
One year I didn't get the pass. They didn't have as many that year. And I ended up getting a packet, and there were a couple that I didn't get into that I had tickets for. And it's just so much better because it gives you this flexibility. So the quality of the experience is so much better because you can hear about something that day and then just go. You can hear about it an hour before.
You just can't hear about it 15
and
minutes
as
or
long
less
as you're
before.
Not 15 minutes or less. And so you're not stuck with guessing a month before what might be good and getting it wrong.
Has that ever happened to you?
That one year that I didn't have the pass.
You got it wrong?
Yeah,
you guessed that it was good and it wasn't?
Most movies were terrible. And so, I made so many changes to what I was planning to see based on talking to people online and other, my other critic friends and everything's like that, what they said was good. Yeah, it just makes the whole experience way better. I highly, highly, highly recommend getting the Locals Pass. It's, to me, 100% worth it.
This is giving me flashbacks to the time I took my kids to Disneyland for the first time.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Because you can do it however you want.
Yeah.
But the people who've done it before and done it well know how to do it to where you get the maximum amount out of what you're trying to do. Yeah. I mean, I remember they were like, okay, this is what you have to do. You go into California's Adventure and you go straight to Cars Land and you get the bounce back pass immediately. Yeah. Then you go over here and it's you go true. Wait in line for this ride. And by the time you're done with that, it's time to go on. And they had like this, they here to here to here to here. And I thought, wow, first of all, I haven't been to Disneyland nearly enough times because I would have never figured this out on my own. But it's nice. So I'm glad to hear you giving those kinds of tips because I will say I'm a rookie to all this. I didn't know at first. I thought it was film festival was like you had to get a pass of some kind. And then only the people who had the passes could see the movies. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like because I knew that the filmmakers were trying to get their films bought to be distributed.
Right.
But I thought it was like a trade show kind of a thing where you know, you go to there's the movie trade show that the theater owners go to, NATO, every year. And they get to see all these things, but nobody else does. And and I thought kind of that's what Sundance was. And I thought everybody wanted to go to Sundance, in air quotes, was to see stars that were coming because the stars get to go to the movies and the stars get to see the stuff that they're premiering and the stars are there for the interviews with Entertainment Weekly and Entertainment Tonight and everybody who shows up. That's what I thought. I thought Sundance was an exclusive group of people get to see the movies. And if you go to Park City, it's to try to see stars walking down the street.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is part of like the Park City appeal. But if you really want the true Sundance experience, as far as the movies and the panels,
well, why it was
and
created,
things, you can still get all of that in Salt Lake. And one thing I also would recommend is try to have a mixture of what they call premieres versus the other exclusives to the festival, because the premieres are movies like Hitman would be a premiere that also played at Cannes and Venice, and it's nice to have a few of those because they're basically kind of, you know, it's going to be like decent, it's because it's already been kind of screened by these other festivals. But if you only see premieres, that's a waste of your money and time because you're going to get another chance to see those movies that are premieres. They're going to be in theaters or they're going to be on, you know, streaming service or whatever. Like, so you want to have a mixture of movies exclusive to Sundance that are going to either be hard to see or going to take a while to see, or, you know, that's special, that's worth, you know, the $26. But you don't want it to only be that because a lot of those are not great. So I think that's a good combination, premieres and exclusives.
Well, but part of it, I mean, for the person who's as interested in the Hollywood stars as anything else, they're probably, their interest level in some of the other films is going to be lower.
That's true.
Especially people who are new to it and rookies. I remember the first time I even did any coverage of it was back in 2017. We did it for the Fan Effect podcast, and you know, we lined up, actually, we had as many interviews with people from Slam Dance as we did from Sundance because the Sundance was that more exclusive feeling.
Yeah.
But you didn't know, like, I was only really interested personally in people I'd heard of before. And, oh, could we get this person that's debuting this movie? I'm not really interested in that movie. I want to talk with them about their previous work. And first of all, they know that, too, going in. But it wasn't until I'd had a little bit of experience that the true purpose of Sundance, why it was created, was not necessarily for those big Hollywood star vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
They were for people making a movie and hoping to get it seen enough, and if it's well made enough, to get some distributing.
And that's really a fun thing when you can kind of then, as a critic at least, then you can champion a film throughout the whole year. You kind of follow it. And like this was at South by Southwest, but there's a movie just debuting this week in theaters called Molly and Max in the Future. And I really loved it. It's South by Southwest. And
did you go to South by Southwest too?
Yeah,
wow.
Last year. Yeah. And I'm going again this year. And so.
How about Cannes? How about Berlin?
I would love. But I actually got press for South by Southwest. I don't know what's up with Sundance, but anyway, it was just fun because I emailed the director and then I've been following kind of the trajectory as it finally got purchased and got, you know, asked getting released this month, and I actually interviewed him for Hallmarkies podcast, and you're obviously not always going to have that kind of thing, but when you can kind of champion a film, it's fun. You can get behind it and sort of encourage them on social media and stuff like that.
Now, we did the Utah Film Critics Association awards. We all met together at the end of 2023 and voted on, as a group, what did we like best. But my favorites movies list from 2023, I believe three of my favorite five or six, I did not know, had come out of Sundance.
Yeah.
Including Radical with Eugenio Derbez.
Oh, that was good.
Scrapper, which I don't know if you saw that one.
I didn't see that one.
Oh, man. That ended up being one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
About a little girl in England whose mom dies. And she's 12, and she's just basically making everybody, all the authorities think that her mom's still around or that she has a guardian, but she's living by herself.
Mm-hmm.
And then her biological dad shows up who she had never really had any contact with. And it's just, it turned out to be this great little gem of a movie that I loved. Mm-hmm. And I've been trying to get everybody to watch it ever since. Thankfully, it got picked up by Paramount Plus, so you can stream it there.
I'll definitely check that. Yeah, and that's just fun when you can kind of get excited about a movie and kind of promote it to all your friends. And that's something you can get out of Sundance, which is special.
Yeah, and so now I'm, you know, then that's when I felt bad I didn't get a credential, because now I'm like, crud, what movie am I missing out on this year that's going to end up on my favorites list at the end of next year, or at the end of this year, I guess, now that we're in 2024. Got to remember that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, let's take a break. And then when we get back, Rachel, you're going to tell us, what did you do for your week of Sundance? Just because, you know, take me to, you saw how many total?
28 total.
28 films in a week. That is dedication, and that is impressive. So we will talk about that when we get back on this special movie show digital extra Sundance.
It's the world famous KSL Movie Show on KSL News Radio.
The Movie Show Digital Extra. We're talking Sundance with Rachel Wagner, member of the Utah Film Critics Association and host of Rachel'sReviews.net. And Rachel, you just told us before the break, 28 films in a week. You started with Girls State.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and what did you end with?
The last one I saw was Hitman.
Hitman.
Richard Linklater. Yeah.
Okay. He's kind of a Sundance long-termer guy.
Yeah. Sundance, South by Southwest. Those are kind of his babies. And
this is the 40th anniversary. I'm actually a little disappointed you didn't see 40 Sundance films in honor of 40 years of Sundance. No, I'm just kidding.
I know.
28 in a week is plenty.
A lot of my critic friends that were accredited saw 40 plus because they could watch online for free.
Ah.
But I did watch a few online. It's nice that they still at least have that service, because a lot of the festivals have moved away and completely abandoned virtual. So even though it's not as much as it was obviously in 2021 and 2022, it's still quite a bit. So that's pretty cool.
It's tough to remember that Sundance 2020 was right before the pandemic.
Yeah,
right before. In fact, people were getting sick from Sundance and they didn't realize they were getting COVID.
I know.
It was like a super spreader event, if I remember.
I got a nasty cold, and I've taken the antibodies, and they said that I wasn't COVID, but I kind of still wonder sometimes after 2020. Nothing like that this year.
All right. So take us through your Sundance week. You started with Girls State on Friday. Did you go to anything after you visited with us on the movie show?
No, I didn't, because I knew I was going to have a four movie day the next day. And so I just thought I better
rest and get
some
energy. I know people who don't watch. Let me put it this way. For people who are the casual moviegoer, and there's nothing wrong with that, because all of us were casual moviegoers at one point.
Sure.
But for the people who've never had to watch a lot of movies, and not just, you know, like, hey, let's binge the seven Harry Potter movies in a row, because usually that's kind of like a party where you got a bunch of friends and you know, it's as much a reason to hang out as it is to watch the movies. But even then, if you think about it, when you power through those, like, it after a couple of movies, like, it's like when you eat too much syrup on your pancakes and suddenly at the last bit, you just don't have any room anymore. It takes more effort than you might imagine it does.
Yeah, and I kind of realized that I think my days of four movies, after Saturday, my back was just hurting so much, and I was like, you know what, I think I'm done with four movie days. And so I only did three on Sunday.
Only?
And, yeah, only three.
So you'd seen eight movies in 2.5 days.
Yeah.
All right, so tell us what they were, too.
Yeah, so let's see, do you want me to just go through?
Yeah, just go through this. You started with Girls State, then on Saturday you went to?
So then on Saturday, the first one that I saw was, let's see here, sorry.
You looking through your Letterboxd?
Yeah. The first one that I saw was Freaky Tales.
Okay.
And that one was, it was very hyped. People were really excited about it. And I think if...
Hyped because of the stars in it, the writing,
well,
what
yeah,
it was about?
Like Pedro Pascal's in it. It does have a very exciting cameo. And I think if you see the trailer and you're like, this looks like my thing, then it'll probably be your thing. It is very bloody. It is. I had fun with it. I don't know if it's really hype worthy. Like... I didn't
you were surprised that it got the hype it did. But
yes.
It's Pedro Pascal and
yes.
Pedro Pascal.
I do think the first and the fourth of the shorts are the best. And the middle ones aren't as good.
So this is a series of
yeah,
four
it's
shorts.
Like an anthology.
Okay.
And they're all set in like the late 70s.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and they have kind of like a disco funk kind of aesthetic to them, and they're
early
fun.
Halloween,
yeah, and
era,
yeah. So I think people will have a good time if you want that kind of like gory, bloody Halloween, you know, kind of thing. I think you can have.
Yeah, you're not selling me personally on this one because yeah. that's not my kind of movie typically.
You have to know who you are sometimes with
yes.
Sundance. and then I also saw Between the Temples, and this was one of the big
that
misses.
Was one I wanted to see.
This was a big miss.
Really?
For
this
yes.
is the one with Carol Kane as a
yes.
Jewish student to
Jason Schwartzman.
To Jason
she decides
Schwartzman,
to
yeah.
get her bat mitzvah. I liked the story. I liked even the script pretty good. The problem was how it was directed. I really just didn't like. He uses a ton of extreme close-ups. He goes right up on people's noses and people's eyes for no reason. So you're just sort of distracted. And then the sound design was also really off-putting to me. Anytime someone scratched, you'd hear a scratch, 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 scratch. Or anybody's chewing food. Like there's this whole dinner table scene. And
that wasn't intentional, you don't think?
Oh, I definitely think it was intentional, but I hated it.
Oh, okay.
Like, I don't want to hear somebody chewing, you know? And like, I mean, I guess if it has some kind of plot, you know, reason for a brief moment maybe, but not like consistently through the whole movie. I don't want to hear people chewing loudly. That's just gross. And I just really didn't like it.
Okay.
So
you were two, you had one that you were like, eh, and then you had one like, I didn't like it. So Saturday wasn't starting. All your high from Girl State was quickly ebbing.
That's true. But then we made up for it because I went over to Rose Wagner. It started out at the Gateway, which they're doing incredible things over there. It was such an upgrade from the library. Thank you. So I started out at the Gateway, first two movies. And then the second two, I was at Rose Wagner, which is a fun venue, but it's probably part of the reason why my back was hurting.
No.
But the two movies at Rose, they tend to have really good movies at Rose Wagner. And it was The Greatest Night in Pop.
Ah, yes, and I just watched that yesterday on
yeah.
Netflix.
I thought it was so well put together.
Oh, so much. It felt like you were there.
Yeah, and I think that song is kind of an earworm. And so I was like, oh, I don't know
it
if
was
gonna...
then, too.
Yeah,
I don't know if you're
like
old
this,
enough to remember
but
that. But
it was so well put together. It was so well done. And they had in the panel after... the guy said... Because I usually only stay for panels for movies I like. Because I don't want... their narrative to like impact my objectivity as a critic.
Well, but shouldn't their narrative have some merit?
Because
then you could say, okay, well, I didn't get that from watching it, but now that you say that, because I've always been back and forth on that one. I feel like I'm with you first mm-hmm. before you want to organize your thoughts before you hear those things mm-hmm. because your reaction is your reaction and it should be.
Yeah.
But I have had some explanations come to where I'm like, okay, now if you were a better storyteller, you wouldn't have had to explain that to me after the fact. But now that you've said that, okay, I see where.
Yeah, I guess I can see that. I just feel like for me, like if I didn't enjoy a film and then I hear them talking about, oh, they spent like 10 years of their life and their life savings.
Then you're like, well, I can't dump over that
like
effort.
Really guilty. And I don't want, you know, things that are extemporaneous to the actual movie itself. I don't want that impacting my review. But I see your point. But anyway, what he said in the panel was that the director, I guess, all of the audio for all of the different scenes in the studio, that they had, the only way that they had that was through this dictaphone recording that they had at this studio, and they had to match, go through piece by piece.
Yeah, you could tell where they logged it up, because suddenly the fidelity of the audio would go, and you knew it was the audio they were getting from the mics that they were talking into, as mm-hmm. opposed to wherever it was coming from before that. That's actually good. I didn't know about the dictaphone. Yeah. I assumed it was just the NAT sound from the mics in the room, or it was the NAT sound from whatever, because they had some big cameras.
But, so it was very interesting. And so I just thought, wow, they did a great job, like, making something very entertaining. It was a lot of fun. And then I saw Thelma.
That's one that I'm looking forward to. Now, Thelma is June Squibb, and people are going to hear that name and say, that sounds vaguely familiar. There's no way to describe her other than you've seen her in some British show where she's an old lady, or you've seen her in some commercial where she plays an old lady, because she is an old lady. But she looks like every grandmother mm-hmm. type you could imagine. If you could imagine a stereotype movie grandmother, she looks exactly like that.
Well, and they were saying that I guess this is her first leading role that she's ever had.
That's what I heard.
Which is kind of amazing. I really enjoyed it. It gets very silly towards the end. And I was invested enough that I'm going with it, you know, and I'm fine. But it was also very sweet. And she basically gets kind of scammed. And so her and Richard Roundtree go on this
Shaft.
Kind of,
her and Shaft.
Yeah. They go on this adventure to try to get back her money that she's been scammed from. And
you know, if Jim Brown was still alive, he'd probably be there with them.
Right. And it was just really fun. I enjoyed the whole cast. Clark Gregg is in it from the Avengers.
Oh yeah. Agent Coulson.
And Parker Posey is in it. She's good.
She's like a Sundance darling, isn't she?
That's true. Yeah.
Didn't Waiting for Guffman come out of Sundance?
I don't know.
It feels like it did, even if it didn't. It feels like it did.
That's true.
All right. So
that was Saturday.
And then after Greatest Night in Pop, you saw Thelma. So that was your three on Sunday.
Four on Sunday. Four on Saturday.
Oh, that's right. That was Saturday.
Then on Sunday, I can go through these quicker if you want.
Okay,
so,
go.
So
highlight the ones you want to highlight, but let's hear what they all are.
Okay, so then on Sunday, I had A New Kind of Wilderness. This was a really surprising documentary because I was debating to see Love Me, which was a big hype one, but it sounded really annoying, or to see it, A New Kind of Wilderness. And I was like, I'm going to go see A New Kind of Wilderness. And I was so glad that I did, because on the surface, it was just like a kind of a tree hugger, off the grid documentary, which we've seen tons, especially Sundance. But it was actually not about that. It was about this family that they experienced the loss of their mother, and basically because she was the main breadwinner and allowed them to have this off the grid life that they had in Norway, everything gets thrown in, obviously emotionally and spiritually and everything. They're upset, but also practically and other things. And so it was, you're just following this family, and it was neat because the whole family was there,
so you actually got to see them.
Yeah, so that was fun.
Okay,
so I enjoyed that.
So that was A New Kind of Wilderness.
Yes. And then a movie called Dee Dee. And this one was more of a mixed bag. I don't think I'll go fresh on it.
It's Korean?
Yes. Yeah.
Because it's Dee Dee with some Asian lettering symbols after it. And everything I've seen on the title, it's like Dee Dee with...
I think it's Korean.
And it probably means Dee Dee in Korean. I don't know, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it had good moments, but this little kid was a lot. And... It's pretty annoying.
That's funny.
And the way that he treated people, even his friends that were like, why are you being so mean to your mom? Like, I don't know. It just didn't quite.
That is the question that all of us
it didn't
who have
quite
teenagers
work,
ask.
Like, tonally to me. They didn't quite, I don't know. It just didn't quite come together for me.
Okay. So that one wasn't, that was a miss for you more than a hit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then I saw the documentary Frida.
Okay.
And this about Frida Kahlo.
Okay, so this is not like the Salma Hayek biopic. This is an actual documentary.
I heard some people saying that, it was just like the movie. I'm like, yeah, because it's about the same person. Like, of course it's like that. What are you talking about? But Yeah, I mean, this, they did all that they could, considering she's somebody that they only have like a few little clips of, video clips. And so you have to use a lot of, you know, still photos. And they did what they could, because they added like animation and just to try to make it as engaging as possible. And she was a character. I mean, she's quite.
Was it done in her art style, the animation?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And she has it's the kind of thing that you would expect to see on like masterpieces and stuff like that on PBS,
okay.
American Masters. But they could never put it on PBS because she has a potty mouth. I was like, wow.
Is she still alive? She's not still alive,
no,
right?
No, okay. She died in like the 60s.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm really up to date on that kind of stuff, obviously.
Okay, so that was Sunday, those three.
All right, so now we are up to 8 films of your 28. So
yeah.
We've got 20 to go, but we still got 5 more weekdays.
Yes, so because I only had the pass, Salt Lake Pass, I saw 2 movies pretty much every night during the week.
Okay.
So, so then on Monday, I saw a movie called Winner. And this is actually the second feature film about Reality Winner. I don't know if you remember her. She was arrested and prosecuted.
That was her actual name?
Yeah, that's her name.
Oh, dear goodness.
Not even like a fake name, like her born name, which they never really explain. I don't know why.
She didn't never go on reality shows, did she?
No,
like seriously, that when you said that, I literally thought that's what it was
for.
Yeah,
you think it's like a stage name, so it's not. That's her like real name. So this has like a pretty decent lead performance. I forget the actress's name, but and then Connie Britton.
What, you couldn't keep track of every actor in all the 28 movies you saw?
Connie Britton is good, but this really felt like a movie of the week to me. I mean, I love
really?
My Lifetime movies. I love Hallmark movies. This felt like a Lifetime movie to me. It was just, I don't know, pretty bland.
Well, maybe it'll make it to there.
Yeah, I can see it.
Because, you know, there's no rule that says it has to be bought by a theater distributor. If Netflix can buy it, why can't Hallmark?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, Lifetime's doing all these ripped from the headlines. They did The Murtaugh with Bill Pullman. So why not this?
Okay.
Yeah. And then I saw the second one for that day was Love Lies Bleeding. And this was a big...
That's the Kristen Stewart one, right?
Yes.
With the bodybuilders and the...
big hyped movie of the festival because Rose Glass, she had a big hit with St. Maud last year or the year before. Anyway, big hit with St. Maud. Is she going to hit it again with this? In my opinion, no. I can see why some people might enjoy this. It has some good performances, has some style. But
is Kristen Stewart good in it?
Yeah, she's good. All the performances actually are good in it. But I just, it goes places that were just too ridiculous for me.
Okay.
Especially the ending.
But this one's going to be one that's coming to theaters later this year,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. And so some people will be able to go where it wants them to go. But the ridiculous just kept piling up and piling up and piling up. And then the ending is just like completely crazy to me. But that's just me. So that one didn't work for me. And so then the next day, I actually had 2 documentaries that I saw. One was called Seeking Mavis Beacon.
I have a question about this one.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the one that teaches typing?
Yes.
It really is.
It really is.
Okay, I don't know if they do that anymore in school, but that was the big thing when I was growing
yes,
up.
Me
Mavis
too.
Beacon teaches
excited.
Typing.
I was excited to see it, but this was a big dud. This was, I think, the worst thing I saw.
Was
at the
it
festival.
Like taking Mavis Beacon teaches typing?
I wish it was that.
Oh,
the problem,
wow.
The
it's worse
was,
than that.
Is this was a clear example of people that set out to make a documentary and their leads like went nowhere. And so it was just like watching them fight with their landlord and like go to a party and like. And
Mavis Beacon goes to parties?
Well, they had their leads.
Why is it Mavis Beacon teaches typing? This is what I've always wondered. Like,
well,
am I
is,
supposed to have heard of Mavis Beacon?
Like, Mavis Beacon is like Aunt Jemima. Like, it's not like real. It's like Betty Crocker. It's not like a real person. And so that's why, like, they've had different models, and they kept trying to find the models, and they talked to
them. See, now that's very helpful to understand.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so it was just... like watching these people like hang around. It was just, there was just nothing. And I think at a certain, it's got to suck when you're like, you've gotten funding, you have an idea, you're starting your documentary and it's got to suck.
Yeah, that's true. With documentaries, you can't do rewrites.
Yeah, when your leads just go nowhere, like, what do you do? And at a certain point, you just say, got to figure out something new, you know.
Then you pull a producer's and you take the write-off somehow.
Right, exactly. So that one was a total miss. But the other documentary that I saw that night was called Luther Never Too Much. And this was about Luther Vandross, who I wouldn't say I'm a super fan. I've enjoyed it. Yeah, I enjoyed his music, but I actually loved this. And it's, if you watch it, you'll be like, it's just a basic documentary. What are you talking about, Rachel? But because it's like in format and everything, it's very basic of this kind of, you know, celebrity, whatever, bio. But I just connected so much with his story. And what in particular, they talked about how he sang all these super cheesy love songs, romance songs, but he never...
Dude, he was an R&B star in the 90s.
Yeah, yeah, Endless Love, you know, things like that. And but he never fell in love himself in his life and how lonely he was and just like them...
That he could write such great romantic music but never benefit from it himself.
Yeah, and so I definitely really connected with that, especially as somebody, like, I've never really fallen in love and I cover all these cheesy Hallmark movies, you know, and so I never thought of that, but that's... I connected with his story a lot, and... so it was very sweet, and I enjoyed it. So that was Tuesday.
Are you more of a fan of Vandross's music now than you
were
before?
Okay. Yeah, definitely.
Did you listen to some on Spotify on your way home?
Yeah, yeah. Super talented, and so then on Wednesday, I saw Suncoast, and this was.
And that's about the video store?
No.
Oh, it's not? Dang.
No, it's actually, so it's about this, it's based on the true experiences of the director, loosely based, where her brother was in hospice care because he was in a coma at the same time that Terry Schiavo was in.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there was that whole thing back and forth. And so Laura Linney, she hasn't been in a movie in like so long, I feel like. The only time I've seen her in a movie, I mean, in anything lately, has been in The Voice of Masterpiece on PBS. So I was so excited, you know, to see her in a movie. She plays the mom. And then there's this young lady she has two children, the one in the coma, the one, the girl. And she was absolutely excellent, this young woman. And then Woody Harrelson plays one of the activists.
Oh, this is the Woody Harrelson movie that I was hearing about.
Yeah, okay. He plays one of the activists, like protesting against the Schiavo thing. And so he was, I didn't trust his character, but then he never ended up actually being untrustworthy. So that was a little bit like jarring
to
watch.
It was Rachel's issues that she had with Woody Harrelson. You were carrying Woody Harrelson off screen to his character on screen. Look slimy, Woody Harrelson. Oh, yeah. Wait, but your character, I guess,
like, oh,
isn't
you're a nice
fine.
Guy. but all the acting was good. I liked it. I do think they spent a little bit too much time, and I didn't feel like the stuff with her and her friends was as authentic. And I kept kind of like, okay, let's move on and let's get back to her and her mom. That was much better, or her and Woody. But it was, I recommend it. And then I saw a movie called Rob Peace, and this was a premiere. This is directed and written by Chiwetel Ejiofor, and it's about this black man, Rob Peace, whose father, Chiwetel Ejiofor, plays his father, ends up going to prison.
So is it a true story or
true
fiction?
Story, okay. Based on a true story. And it's a little bit of a tricky thing because this one also felt pretty Lifetime-y to me, pretty movie of the week. I think it was pretty well done, but...
Well, hey, some of the Lifetime movies are pretty well done.
They're pretty well done. It just was... I felt like I knew exactly what was going to happen, and what do you do if it's real events? I don't know. I don't know how you make it less predictable, because it is what it is, right?
Well, the only way to make it less predictable is to make up stuff didn't happen.
Exactly. So I don't know.
Which some do.
Some do. Or, like, sometimes you can, like, look what they did with Oppenheimer, the way they structured it with piecing different, you know, the timeline. And sometimes you can do creative things with the timelines or, you know, with certain
That's
things
true.
To tell a true story in a creative way. But this one was pretty bland. Okay, so then I saw Handling the Undead and So It Begins on online. This is when they online became available.
Handling the Undead.
And both of those I didn't like.
It's a zombie movie, I'm guessing.
Yeah, Handling the Undead, except for it's the most boring zombie movie I've ever seen in my life. Like, it's literally just people standing around staring thoughtfully with their zombie-fied or dead loved one holding them for long periods. And
okay.
It was really...
Was it trying to make some kind of artistic statement?
Yeah, absolutely. If you like meaningful staring, a lot of meaningful staring, then this is the movie
Imagine
for you.
As they're making it. Okay, now this time I want you to stare ahead blankly, yeah, but somehow imbue sadness, yeah, but not on the face,
right,
in your eyes.
Yeah. So then I saw live, in the Land of Brothers, and this is three shorts about it's three shorts about Afghani immigrants in Iran. And
does it not go well for them there?
It was very depressing. All of them were very depressing. I guess actually it's four. They were well done though. They were very well acted, especially the last one was the best one. But yeah.
Would you say this is an interesting, that just triggered a thought. Would you say that, I mean, I think there's two kinds of movies. There's the people that make movies, you know, the so-called hero movies, because mm-hmm, there's, you want to go to a movie to feel like, wow, we can do this. Whatever the hardship is, we can overcome it. There's hope for humanity, or like, you know, I hope if I'm ever, yeah, in that situation, I could be good like that. Mm-hmm. And then there's the everything sucks and life is a waste. And all you people who believe in this hero stuff are just tricking yourselves, and they leave you specifically without a feeling of hope. Like, you leave hopeless to whatever this problem is, there's no solution. Mm-hmm. Would you say that more Sundance movies lean towards the positive? You're supposed to leave the theater feeling positive or negative?
I mean,
on the balance, you saw 28. I feel like you could make a pretty good.
I tend to like hunt down the ones that are the more positive ones. So
that's my style too.
There's so many movies at Sundance that you really can cater it to whatever your taste is. And there's certainly, you could see 28 movies that are real downbeat.
See, I'm just going stereotypes here.
Yeah, but
the artistic type and the type that I don't want to tell the type of story that everyone else tells. Mm-hmm. Let me show how dark things can be.
Well, especially
I get tired of that when it gets too much.
Especially if you're not going to a lot of the premieres. Because the premieres are, by design, going to be more crowd-pleasing because they're designed for crowds. They're going to be released in theaters. They're going to be... And so there's going to be more crowd-pleasing. But if you're seeing, like, exclusively the dramatic ones or exclusively, you know, then you're more likely to get a lot of the real damage.
Okay, just curious. My stereotype mind feels like, in an effort to be more artsy and less mainstream, mm-hmm, that they would try to go for sort of that nihilistic or the bleak outlook on things. Yeah. Like, that's what Love Lies Bleeding, from everything I've seen about it, feels like where it's going to end. Now, I don't know because I didn't see it, but it's not going to end with the thought of like, wow, you know, they're going to be okay and mm-hmm, we're going to be all right as a people. We'll find a way through these dark times that we find ourselves in.
You mean the Handling the Undead?
No. I was actually talking about Love Lies Bleeding with Kristen Stewart.
Well, Love Lies Bleeding,
like, that falls into the nihilistic, but I'm still laughing about the meaningful looks while you hold your dead loved one. I'm hoping that wasn't a documentary, to be quite honest.
Well, hopefully not, since it's about zombies.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't know.
Well, I mean, speaking of the totally opposite, it was the day of opposites, because then I saw Will and Harper that night, and this is a total crowd pleaser, totally life affirming. Everybody will love it. It's about comedian Will Ferrell documentary.
I heard about that.
Yeah,
one.
His friend Harper,
who he used to write with on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, that used to write for him. He has recently transitioned as transgender. She has. She has.
Yes.
She has recently transitioned as transgender, and. And so they decide to take this road trip together so that they can get to know each other in this new relationship and they see America. And it probably had, about two stops too many. It's almost 2 hours, and I think it would have been a little better if it had clocked in around 90. But it still was very sweet, and I can't imagine almost anybody will enjoy it.
Okay.
Yeah. Very sweet.
So now are we halfway through?
We're over halfway.
Just kidding.
So then I saw online, The Summer is in the Summers.
Okay.
And that was a big award winner or whatever.
Yeah. So we'll talk about that when we get to the award winners.
So, and I enjoyed it for the most part. And then I saw A Brief History of a Family, which was extremely well made, but also very depressing. So
okay.
That was one of those. And then I saw A Real Pain, which also
that's won. The one Jesse Eisenberg and
yeah.
Who's the other one?
Kieran Culkin.
Kieran Culkin, that's right.
Yes.
And funny? That's what I'm hoping. Is it funny?
It is funny.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think especially if you're from like a big family with lots of cousins and stuff, you'll connect with this story. I know I did.
Okay.
And everybody has those family members that are kind of loud and wow, you're a lot.
That was one I was expecting to see be released wide later this year.
Oh yeah, it will for sure.
Okay.
And what they were so smart is this movie's only 89 minutes. And that
Ooh.
Was brilliant because this Kieran Culkin character is a lot. He is a lot. And
is he like his Succession character at all?
I don't know. I don't watch that show, but he's pretty annoying. But because it was so well paced and because of the way that it's only 89 minutes, I just think that was so smart because you just enough of this character.
Okay.
Yeah, it really worked. It was great. And then I saw a movie called Your Monster.
All right.
And this was a lot of fun. It's kind of a take. It's like a more violent take on Beauty and the Beast.
Oh.
She's had this horrible breakup, and she finds this monster in her closet. And they don't, like, waste any time explaining how he got there or what the lore is or anything. He's just there. And and he kind of helps her. And, of course, they end up falling for each other. And
All right.
It is kind of bloody, but it was fun.
That was Your Monster?
Your Monster, yeah. And I think that got picked up by Searchlight, so it should get a release.
Okay.
Yeah. Then
Bloody Beauty and the Beast. Got it.
Yeah. And then I saw 10 Lives, and this was the animated film from the festival. And it was fine, but I think they made a huge mistake in that they kept calling it's about this cat who keeps experiencing all these different lives. And so he starts out as a cat and then he dies and then he becomes a dog and then he's like a
95 lives?
Yeah, well, 10 lives.
10 lives.
Yeah.
What's the 95 one that Jared and Jerusha Hess did?
I don't know.
I swear that was them. But okay.
But the problem they kept when they're a cat, they kept calling him the owner kept calling him Puss. Which I thought was a big mistake because Puss in Boots was so great. Last Wish was so good. I loved that movie so much. And it has like a somewhat similar premise. And so it just made you think continually of a better movie. So that was a mistake. But it was watchable.
It was watchable. Going on the box art. Rachelsreviews.net.
Yeah. And then there was Ghostlight. And this was my favorite. This was my favorite of the festival. This is, I thought it did such a brilliant job of managing tone because this could have been a heavy one and it does have heavy things in it. It's about this construction worker who is kind of this gruff, you know, man. And he, through various conferences, ends up in a, he's had this family tragedy with his son. And through various conferences, he ends up in a community theater version of Romeo and Juliet.
What?
Like, yes. And what was really fun is that the man, his wife, and daughter in the movie are real life family.
Oh.
Yeah. So they had that like that chemistry. The script was really funny, and there were enough lighter moments that even though it deals with themes of suicide and loss and grief and you know all this stuff, there was enough kind of lighter moments and community moments and feels and of course.
And it's called Ghostlight?
Ghostlight. I don't even know why it's
Did it get
that.
Picked up?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's going, I think IFC bought it.
Oh, okay.
So it's going to go to theaters. So keep an eye out for it. And then the last day, I saw a movie. I saw three online. I saw Skywalker's A Love Story, which
I've heard about that
documentary about these crazy people that go up to the top of high buildings, and it was pretty fun. It was entertaining. I think Netflix is going to have that. And then this movie Rain Us, which I'm so confused why they let this movie in the festival, because it is almost exactly the same as In the Summers, like almost identical. And they have the same plot. They both have two daughters. They're both about them connecting with their father, divorced. And I feel like I've seen this movie 100 times. It's like after Boyhood, everybody is trying to make
that was Boyhood. A Richard Linklater
movie,
Linklater. Right?
Yeah, I mean, we saw it last year with After Sun. We've seen it like the girls trying to connect with their divorced dad. It's just like I just feel like I've seen that movie so many times, and so in the fact that they had even they're both Spanish speaking movies. They're like the same movie. It's just so weird to me that they would let both of these.
Were they both in competition?
Yeah, I think so. Oh. Yeah. I just don't know why they would let both of those movies into the festival. I didn't get it. The kids were cute, but it was boring. And then I saw a movie called Little Death. I hated it. It was awful. It was the worst of Sundance. The kind of movie that thinks it's so important and it's saying so much when really it's saying something you've seen in 1,000 other Sundance movies, and it was just very annoying. And I really didn't.
So
like
two
it.
Thumbs up from Rachel.
Yes.
Well, that's quite the list, Rachel. So let's take a break on the movie show. When we come back for our final segment, we're going to go over the award winners. We can get your thoughts on a couple of them. And then we want to hear Rachel's jury awards.
Yeah.
I guess we've already gotten a little bit of a preview. We know which one you didn't like, and we know which one you loved. But we'll get to all that when we come back on this final segment of the Movie Show Bonus Extra Sundance Edition.
The Movie Show.
It ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done.
On KSL News Radio.
It's a Movie Show digital extra. Andy Farnsworth solo today, but our special guest is Rachel Wagner from the Utah Film Critics Association, who, and multiple Sundance visitor over the years. And
it's my eighth Sundance.
Eighth Sundance, and you saw 28 this year. We appreciate you giving us a heads up on all of them. So let's go real quick over what were the award winners, and then you can tell us what you thought. Now, the grand jury prize for dramatic. So this was voted on by the jury of like Kristen Stewart and the other people they picked. This is not the audience award, which is a separate thing. It was given to In the Summers.
Yep. So that's the one that I said they had the same movie with Rain Us. It was good. Like the little girls were cute.
But it wasn't the best for you.
No.
And this was for dramatic too, by the way, because they separated into documentaries and stuff like that. So
yeah.
But that also got the directing award for the director, Alessandro La Corazza, Summers, got the directing award. So
interesting.
The screenwriting award went to Jesse Eisenberg for Real Pain.
Yeah, it's deserved.
Yes?
Yeah.
Okay. The dramatic jury award for best ensemble was Dee Dee.
Interesting. Yeah.
Let's see. The dramatic special jury award for breakthrough performance was Suncoast and Nico Parker.
Yeah, she's great. She's the young lady.
Oh, okay. In Suncoast. Okay. The documentary grand jury prize was Porcelain War, but you didn't get to that one.
Mm-mm.
Okay. And then the directing award was Sugarcane. You didn't get to see that one. Mm. Let's see. You did see Frida. That won the editing award for documentaries.
Yeah. And that makes sense to me. The way that they edited the real footage with the animation with the, I could see that.
The festival favorite award was Daughters, which you didn't get to see.
No, but I've heard only raves.
Well, I was going to say, so it won the festival fave. And then the audience award for dramatic went to Dee Dee.
Mm-hmm.
But you disagree with that one?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like awful, but it wouldn't be my pick.
Okay, and then let's see. The next innovator award was Little Death.
Thank you.
And then let's see if there was any others. The The World Cinema Dramatic Special Jury Award for Original Music was handling The Undead.
Oh, the music was nice.
You remember the music?
I will give it that. It's a beautiful. I mean, the cinematography is beautiful, too.
The World Grand Jury Prize for Documentary was A New Kind of Wilderness.
Yeah, that's very good.
Let's see. And then I don't think you'd seen
any
others.
I'm really surprised
others.
Will and Harper didn't get an audience award.
Yeah, the audience awards are usually pretty good predictors of the stuff that's enjoyable. So
it was so crowd-pleasing.
Well, all right. Now it's time for Rachel's jury awards. Now,
yes.
Rachel, you're free to give whatever category you want, but let's have you pick three fun Rachel type categories because you have your style.
Yeah.
So the Rachel Hallmark, the best potential Hallmark movie. Let's have that one of what you saw.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see Rachel's. I don't know what do you want to use as a definer for your type
of
style? Well, I
think you got to give if I'm giving best potential rom-com or Hallmark award, I got to give it to Your Monster, even though it's bloody and R-rated.
Okay.
So
it's Beauty and the Beast and the blood.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So
okay.
That one,
so Your Monster gets the Rachel's mm-hmm. potential Hallmark hit
right.
award.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I would give maybe honorable mentions to the Skywalker Love Story.
Which I'm very disappointed every time I hear it. I'm thinking it's a documentary about Anakin and Padme, maybe, and what their love hath wrought. And then I find out it has nothing to do with Star Wars.
But it could be fan fiction for Kylo
and Rey. Oh.
But
as long as it isn't Luke and Leia, right?
Right. But I would give honorable mentions to Will and Harper.
Okay.
And they're more of a friendship.
Now, how about Rachel's I Can't Believe I Had No Idea How Good This Was Going to Be award?
The Luther documentary.
Luther Vandross documentary.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. How about the Rachel most disappointing? I went in wanting to like this and I couldn't.
Well, I would say Between the Temples was the most disappointing because
okay.
I love Carol Kane, Jason Schwartzman.
But at least they get an award for that, right?
I guess.
Even if it's a little
yeah,
more Razzie
right.
than Oscar, but.
Yeah, that one had.
All right. Now, what is Rachel's best dramatic award?
I got to give it to Ghostlight.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Rachel's audience favorite award? Also Ghostlight?
That one's a tough one.
Your movie. Audience, it's you.
Just me.
Just you. Yeah. You can poll yourself if you want. You can argue with yourself.
Well, since I gave Ghostlight, I already won. And I don't really think of Hitman as like a true Sundance movie. I think it's because it's all these other. But that would be my second favorite because it was so good. But I think I would give. I think I might give it to Thelma.
Thelma. Ooh, yeah. And that's what I'm hoping. That's what I'm hoping is as crowd pleasing as it sounds on paper. I've learned over the years, and I have I know you do theater reviews also.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
My brother and sister-in-law do a lot of things and have over the years with Desert Star Theater.
Love
Desert Star.
Yeah.
And I hear the titles for their plays, Captain American Fork, you know, Murder on the Front Runner Express. They're hilarious. And they're all locally themed.
Uh-huh.
And you think with a title like that, this is going to be hilarious. And some of them absolutely are. But I've also learned that sometimes the idea or the title works better as an idea than a fully fleshed out thing.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, if I was going to say, I would say Love Lies Bleeding would be the one. Like, there's good stuff in there. There's good performances. There's good ideas. But it just didn't all come together for me.
The movie where the sum of its parts
mm-hmm.
is still not greater than the whole.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah. And I guess I would say Freaky Tales might be the one that's the opposite. Like, it's kind of a mess and some of them don't work, but it was enough to recommend.
Okay. Anything else you want to tell us about Sundance that we need to, that do you think somebody would like to know? That's a newbie like me, because I like to know stuff.
Yeah. I think that if you are local, it's worth taking advantage of Sundance Film Festival. It's a really special experience. And I mean, I saw 28 films and I would recommend 17 of them. So that's pretty good.
That's a good percentage.
Yeah. That I think were worth my time. And that I would recommend on like Rotten Tomatoes. So it's pretty good.
All right. Rachelsreviews.net, the Hallmarkies podcast.
Yes.
And is Hallmarkies the Christmas one too, or do you have a Christmas one also?
Well, that's, yeah, so Hallmarkies is the
Hallmarkies
Christmas one.
Hallmarkies is Christmas one. Because there are Hallmark movies that aren't Christmas, but.
And it's very exciting because they're, for February, Hallmark, they're doing Jane Austen month, and it's going to be epic.
Awesome. Well, Rachel, thanks for being part of the movie show bonus, yeah. Sundance Extra. And hopefully next year when we do the bonus extra Sundance episode, Steve and or I will be able to actually discuss the films with you as well. So we can be like the snobs of like, well, the rest of you shall see this later this year, but you can enjoy our discussion about it now.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, Rachel. Well, thanks for being with us. And thank you for joining us on this special bonus movie show digital extra about Sundance 2024.